Hello and welcome to Chief Among Friends. I'm your host, Dr. Chris Hobson, Chief Medical Officer at Orion Health. On this podcast, I chat about topics ranging from HIE technology priorities to new innovations in care coordination and population health, along with a look at precision medicine and patient engagement. We will discuss these topics in the context of real physicians and patients' experience in frontline care. You can follow the conversation on hashtag ChiefAmongFriends and be sure to follow me on Twitter at Dr. Chris Hobson. Today, we are very fortunate to have with us and the chance to interview Dr. Alan Osford, a primary care physician in Edmonton, Alberta, former CMIO for Alberta Health Services, a clinical professor at the University of Alberta, and frequent advisor to the Government of Alberta. Most importantly, Dr. Osford is currently practicing with a panel of around 1,200 patients and sees the impacts of technology and related trends as it impacts patients and providers every day. Dr. Osford and I recently published a paper on precision medicine. In this paper, we took a look at a lot of non-traditional data types, including genomics, and also environmental data, social determinants data, public health data, and patient-generated health data. The major message within the paper is that non-traditional data can give providers and patients a much more accurate understanding of their patients. For today, we thought it would be of great interest to discuss one specific type of data, namely patient-generated health data. In the paper, we discussed the pros and cons and a balanced discussion about where patient-generated health data is beneficial and where there are risks. We also discussed the technologies, which can include, for instance, patient portals, patient-provider messaging, patient apps, Fitbits, 23andMe genomic data, and many more. So for Dr. Osford this morning, would you like to set the stage for us, please? Perhaps define some terms, your experience as frontline physician, and where you see some of the more interesting trends today.
Thanks, Chris. As you mentioned, I'm a practicing community-based family physician seeing patients in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, for the last 38 years, and I'm actively involved in teaching medical students and residents. I'm very comfortable leveraging technology to enhance patient care. I use a very robust EMR, and we've had the privilege of having a very functional health information exchange in Alberta since 2006. We often find that people struggle to understand the difference between an EMR and an HIE. And in Canada in particular, sometimes the terminology gets confusing because we actually refer to the HIE, Health Information Exchange, as an EHR, Electronic Health Record. Basically, the EMR is a provider or organizational-centric patient chart, while the HIE is a patient-centric tool that can aggregate information from multiple sources. So just wanted to make sure we're talking about the same thing when we talk about HIEs. When it comes to providing patients with the best possible care, the concept of the patient's medical home is emerging as being a very important issue across all of North America. What this means is a patient has a single area that they can go to for their health needs to provide the care or be referred to for care. I like to think of the concept of the three T's as enablers. The first T stands for team, which means doctors, nurses, allied healthcare providers, and most importantly, including the patient as an integral part of the team. The second T stands for targeted, which is another way of describing precision medicine, providing care that is unique to a specific patient. The third T stands for technology, and that's what enables all of this to happen.
Now, patient-generated health data is a relatively new concept in the world of EMRs, EHRs, and HIEs. It is getting a lot of attention as bringing patients more closely into their care and care decision making. Dr. Osford, with respect to patient-generated data, What are some of the real and potential pros and benefits that you see with this new capabilities?
Well, giving patients a means to provide pertinent information certainly has a lot of benefits. We've had the patient-provider messaging for some time now and have very positive experiences with that using the patient portals. The ability for patients to send us targeted information, such as home blood pressure results or home blood sugar results, can provide us with information that allows us to do virtual care without always having to need the face-to-face with the patient. Another example is having patients with congestive heart failure post their daily weights can alert us to increases that can quickly be dealt with and actually prevent hospitalizations. Also, we can sometimes capture the moment when a specific event occurs in their life. And for example, earlier this week, I had a patient notify me of the death of a close relative from lung cancer, which provided a perfect opportunity to actually address the fact that they were a smoker and work on that. If I hadn't seen them for 2 months and then found that out, I would have missed that moment to capture to be able to work on that.
So this sounds like a wonderful thing that patients are more actively able to participate and generate data and contribute that to their medical record. And as we've learned, there's obviously a wide variety of data types that can be involved. Perhaps you'd like to give us an understanding of some of the downsides or cons or challenges to this.
Sure. So probably one of the most important concepts when we talk about providing information and methods of communication is the concept of a synchronous versus an asynchronous form of communication. Synchronous means it's in real time, you're back and forth, and you're sure that you're getting feedback on what you're doing. Asynchronous means something is posted and there may be a delayed period of time before someone replies. And of course, the information we're talking about right now is mainly asynchronous information. So when it comes to situations where there's more urgency, sometimes we want to be careful about those situations. A classic one is getting a message sent via the patient portal saying, I'm having chest pain, I'm having difficulty breathing, and it feels like there's an elephant sitting on my chest. But we don't want that to be asynchronous. We want that patient to phone and be given advice directly. So one of the risks is the assumption that these are done in real time, and we always have to be very careful about that. For example, we say that these are for non-urgent requests, and we make sure people understand that. I think a second issue is the signal-to-noise risk. Is as we have more and more pieces of data coming in, and especially being provided by patients, we may find that they actually will sort of send us so much data that we can't assimilate it very carefully. Classic example of that is patients asking, can I please have my Fitbit data sent to me? And I don't really want to know exactly how many steps they walked every single day. I want to know they're doing regular exercise and I want that information, but I certainly don't want this sort of floodgates of information being sent to me. So those are two examples of things that I think could be a challenge.
That's very interesting. From a physician perspective, and in terms of physicians and uses of technology, we talk sometimes about the syndrome of if you build it, they will come. In other words, if we enable this technology, then physicians will automatically learn to love it and everything will happen. What I was wondering is if you could give us some thoughts in terms of, from a physician perspective, what is reasonable to expect of physicians in terms of in their response and their ability to manage patient-generated data?
Yeah, of course, that's very important. Probably the most important factor I think that I hear from most of my colleagues is the concept of protected time. You know, if you're already working a 12 or 14-hour day and you're doing, you know, care involving a lot of clinical decisions with a lot of interruptions, having the time to actually go in and view this data or to leverage this data and make use of it is important. And so creating some form of protected time makes a difference. I think part and parcel with that is there needs to be a payment model of some kind to allow them to protect their time as well. If taking a great deal of time to look at extraneous data that is useful but takes away time that does affect generated income can be a challenge for some clinicians as well. So making sure we have some form of a payment model, I think, makes a difference as well. There's also some situations where we know that we can actually do harm by enabling some of these communications as well, and in particular with messaging. So one of the examples of that is the worried well. Somebody who has, say, an anxiety disorder, and every little thing they're worrying about, they're now communicating or they're now posting, which is then brought into the health information exchange. In those situations, number one, we may be enabling them and making their anxiety worse by having them post all these things and then wait for answers on it. And secondly, again, it's that floodgate thing where, you know, there's a lot of noise coming in and there may be one important message in all of the other messages and figuring out how to do that. So sometimes in that situation, we may not enable that capability for that particular patient. Of course, the same goes with certain situations in mental health issues as well, the commonest one being schizophrenia, where if there's a paranoia component to it and you're messaging back and forth, there could be unintended consequences where we may be doing harm without realizing it. And then probably the third situation is in those rare cases where we maybe have adversarial situations, a situation where a patient and a provider are in an adversarial situation, and then we're actually having information posted back and forth can sometimes accelerate a little bit, somewhat like the problems we see in social media these days as well. But certainly the vast majority of cases, being able to do these things actually makes a big difference. So what I've described is really the rare situations, but things we need to be keeping in mind.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm thinking in terms of how this affects in terms of the patient-physician relationship, and I'm wondering if perhaps sometimes when physicians, sometimes we make assumptions that perhaps the patient and the patient-generated data could clarify, and I wonder if there are situations like that.
Yeah, I think there are. You know, we as providers sometimes in we think that we know what's best for our patients, and we think if you will just do this, this will happen, and we'll just do that, and we have these goals of care that we provide with them. But we don't always recognize the sort of stage of change that the patient is in. Are they ready to hear these kinds of things? Is the first thing I said the best first thing for them? Or is, in fact, the third thing I said the best first thing for them? So I think having that ability to pull that data in, and this includes things like social determinants of health and other issues like that, can really help shape our understanding when we're working together with the patient to set up goals and provide care plans so that we can do a far better job, because it's far more two-way and far more interactional. And again, in an asynchronous manner, it doesn't always have to be with the face-to-face encounter.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Osford. This has been very informative, and we really appreciate your depth of knowledge and expertise in this area.
Thank you very much, Chris.
If you'd like to join us for future episodes of this podcast, please follow us on #ChiefAmongFriends and on Twitter @DrChrisHobson.